For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
So let's begin. So tonight I want to talk about the concept of dressing up on Purim. These notes that I've given you, I really wrote them for myself as far as guiding myself through the class, and I decided once I did that already to give it to you. So they weren't created with the intention of being notes, but you're welcome to follow along as far as that goes. Dressing up on Purim, as I wrote here, which was really to myself, is probably the most ubiquitous element of Purim. The idea, the concept of seeing the costumes come out, the excitement to people who prepare and plan months in advance for what it is that they will dress up as on Purim. It has become very much associated. If you see anything, any PR material, and there's a mask on it, you immediately know it's Purim. So it has that much become associated with the holiday that there's going to be some element of mask, disguise, dress-up that we very much affiliate it naturally with the holiday. Which is interesting, and I'm going to give a disclaimer to tonight's class, and it's a disclaimer that I generally don't give before a shiur because it's an interesting type of disclaimer, and that is the concept of dressing up on Purim is actually not part of the Yontif. It's not part of the day. And what I mean by that is, it's certainly not mentioned in the Megillah. You don't find anywhere from the beginning to the end any concept of dress up as a part of the celebration. We do find in the Megillah that there are four mitzvahs on the day. That all comes straight from the Megillah, the concept of celebrating with a meal, with Matanos Avyonim, Shloach Manos, hearing the Megillah. That's the day. Dress up doesn't really make it into the Megillah at all. Not only does it not make it into the Megillah, it doesn't make it into the Gemara. It's not referenced anywhere. There's an entire tractate on Maseches Megillah. It is not discussed in terms of like how much do you have to dress up, how late, how much into the day can you begin to dress. Like none of those questions that you would affiliate with the Gemara and a mitzvah of the day. At what age do you have to start? None of that. It's not discussed. There's just no concept of dress up in the Gemara, not in the Midrashim, not even in the Gaonim, which is the period following the Gemara. There is simply no reference to it. Believed to be, when we say like an old minhag, sometimes you say this is a really old minhag, it dates back 500-600 years old. So that's old, but when you think about the fact that the miracle happened nearly 2,000 years ago, if not more than 2,000 years ago, so it's relatively new as far as that goes. Now why do I make this disclaimer? Because when you give a shiur on, say, why do we use olive oil for the menorah? Why is that ideal? Well, that's part of the Chazal, when they established the sages the way they want, that's the ideal way they wanted us taught. So you could say why. And whatever answer you'll come to is part and parcel of the day. It's significant. If you ask, why is sending gifts to the poor or to your friends on Purim significant? You're getting at the essence of the day. That's how the sages wanted us to celebrate. And however you'll explain that becomes thereby very significant. Tonight we're talking about why do we dress up? So my disclaimer is, what we're going to be offering are suggestions for a custom which is deeply rooted in the Jewish people for 600, 700, 800, maybe 900 years, whatever it may be. But what we're going to talk about today does not mean that we're defining the essence of the holiday, because when the sages enacted the holiday, they did not include dress up in it. So it's an important disclaimer that what we'll be discussing are ideas, you'll see they're all going to come out of the Megillah, and they'll all be, I hope, Torah true ideas, but we're trying to explain like how did this come about and why do we do this, and yet I hope we will touch on the essence of Megillah. I'm planning on doing that of Purim, but I still with a disclaimer of this is not from the sages, because the concept of dressing up didn't come from the sages. It was a later concept, but it's become so much part and parcel that many sages way before me have struggled. So why? Where did this come from? How did it start? How did it become so widespread? And what's the point of doing so? So I'd like to suggest some things. We're going to focus on just one approach tonight. I want to mention a couple. We're going to be focused really on one from the Sfas Emes, who was the second Ger Rebbe. Lived 100-150 years ago. maybe close to 200 years ago, I don't have exact dates. And as his approach, his understanding, as explained by my Rosh Hashiva from Kerem Yavner, Chaim Yaakov Goldrich of Blessed Memory. So this is a suggestion. We're going to have a whole piece of Torah on it. The Torah, I hope, will be true. Whether or not it explains the custom of getting dressed up, you know, we'll see. But that's an important disclaimer that I want to offer, because the reason why you're here tonight is because it is pretty, like, why do we get dressed up on Purim? And am I missing something if I don't get dressed up? Am I celebrating? Can I celebrate the day? And say, what's with getting... Okay, is that enough of my introduction? Okay. Let me share a couple of reasons that are offered. Reasons meaning from the response of the last several hundred years, responses have been offered. Reasons have been offered for this very question. I'm not the first one to ask this question. So the sages, the rabbis of the last several hundred years have also asked this question. Why are people getting dressed up? Where did that come from? And they offer a number of interesting answers. These are just suggestions for the custom which has developed among the Jewish people, which range from, when you read the story, the critical identities of this story are all hidden throughout the story. Mordechai, one of the major heroes, is unbeknownst to Ahasuerus throughout the whole story until the very end. He sits there in the gates of the king's palace, and his relationship to his own wife, he doesn't know. Esther, her identity is hidden the whole story. She's a Jewess. And from the very beginning, Mordechai tells her, don't tell anybody, and she doesn't. And the whole story unfolds with her identity kept hidden. And of course, the most significant hidden identity in the entire Megillah is God's presence himself. His name is not mentioned. It doesn't have that element of all the other books in Tanakh in which God plays a very overt role. It's all behind the scenes. So some are for the reasons. Where did the custom develop? Because it was sort of, the whole story is a hidden identity, and thereby we find this concept of getting dressed up. That's a reason that's given. There's another reason that's offered, that at the end of the story, the non-Jews were attacked by the Jews. In the reversal, v'nahapachu, everything was flipped on its head, and the non-Jews would pretend to be Jews to protect themselves from the vengeance of the Jews. So you have a story in which during the 12 months of fear amongst the Jewish people, the Jews would really desire to look like non-Jews to protect themselves, and then when it's flipped, the non-Jews were pretending to be Jews so that they wouldn't be slaughtered. And so this custom developed that we should, you know, flip our identity, so to speak, on Purim. Another reason that's offered. The third reason that's offered, one of the mitzvahs of Purim, of course, is matanos le'evyonim, giving gifts to the poor. And Purim people, they're walking around giving out gifts. They're giving out food to their friends and money to the poor. Well, not everybody, obviously, who needs it necessarily wants it to be known that they need it, that they're on the receiving end of these gifts. So people would dress up, so to speak, to hide their identity so that those who need it would be protected by their costumes and would receive the monies that they needed without having to actually be with their faces put forward amongst the community as people would go around. There are reasons that are offered. There are several other reasons along this line that would all touch on why it is that this custom developed. Again, it's not from the Megillah, it's not from the Gemara, it's not from the Gaonim, that this custom developed to dress up. So I'm going to share this approach, I'm going to introduce it as follows. Let's go through the story, and I'd like to point out how many instances of clothing, where clothing plays a role in the Megillah. You'll be amazed at how many different instances, and I'd like to see if we could pick up a theme that runs through all of the instances. Where is this? Now, almost all of them are explicit in the Megillah. One is in the Medrash, two in the Midrashim, but you're familiar probably with them, and the rest are all explicit. How many times we find the concept of clothing referenced in the Megillah? Now, if I hadn't given you the sheet, we would have gone through it and we would have tried to figure it out. But it's on the sheet, so it's something you can just cheat and read them off. So let's. So because you haven't looked. Yeah. Yeah, I do. Okay, so you haven't looked yet. So where do you find? Where do we find clothing in the Megillah? So let's start from the very beginning. The first instance that we find clothing is not explicit. It's actually in the Medrash, at the party, the feast of Ahasuerus. What's Ahasuerus wearing at his feast? Anyone heard this magic before? The garments of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest himself. He's celebrating the 70-year exile of the Jewish people that had been prophesied about, that there'd be this brief exile. He had calculated that it was over, and he's going to celebrate. That's why we find when we read the Megillah, when we talk about the vessels that were taken out for his feast, we read it with the tune of Eicha, lamenting, because what vessels were taken out to be served? They were the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. And we read those words in the tune of Eicha, because look what had happened to our holy vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, were being used at the feast of Achashverosh, and the sages see in the language that he had adorned his palace with all these fancy linens, and that part of his adornment were the clothing of the Kohen Gadol himself, that King Achashverosh had put himself in to celebrate. That's instance number one, right in the beginning, that we find clothing playing a role. Number two,
Vashti.
And here it's almost a reversal. And what role does her clothing come in? And that, right? It doesn't, actually, right? That's the whole thing, right? Because I want you to come in without clothing. Normally you should be in your clothing, and because the sages describe it was actually a midah k'neged midah, it was a measure for measure. She used to make the Jewish girls work for her on Shabbos, and she would humiliate them by making them work without clothing. So it was worked out in heaven that she should be humiliated in the same way, and that the king in his drunken stupor, who was bragging about how beautiful she was, so all of his people around him said, "Well, she's so beautiful, let's see her. We want to see her really in all of her beauty, in all of her glory, without any clothing," and she of course refuses. But that's instant number two, and again, that one's not explicit. These are the only two that are not explicit. Everything else we'll find will be in the psukim itself, in which the whole episode comes about because she's gotten rid of, and it was because of an instance with clothing in which she refused to be humiliated by appearing without clothing. Then we find... Yeah?
Okay, so we don't see the camera in the floor.
Yeah.
But Esther enters the royal bedroom. Months of perfume
yeah,
and everything, but like, well, this grooming is
okay, but,
going
but there's no clothing there.
Okay,
there was no, look, there was, the Megillah does not mention anything about changes of the clothing or clothing at all in that aspect.
Okay,
going in order, next on our list we find Mordechai. The decree comes out, Haman, after being enraged by the fact that Mordechai wouldn't bow down. So he comes up with this plan, he goes to the king, it's decided, and when word gets out, what does Mordechai do? He dons sackcloth. Right? He takes off his clothing, and he puts on sackcloth. Then the Megillah describes that all of the Jews did that. Kol makom, two psukim later, the Megillah tells us, I'll give you the exact psukim. First, the pasuk says, Vayalbesh sak va'efer. This is Mordechai. He rips his clothing, Vayalbash sak va'efer, and he puts on sackcloth in mourning. And then two psukim later, the Megillah says, Uvachol midino, midino. And in every country where the word reached about the impending doom, there also, Evil Gadol Yehudim, there was great mourning. Sak ve'ether, also they all changed their clothing into the mourning clothes of sackcloth. Then the story goes on. Mordechai goes to Esther and says, "You must enter into the royal palace." And what does the Megillah say? How does she enter? Vatilbash Esther Malchus. Esther puts on her royal clothing and enters. Just these are like small details in the story that when you read through you may not notice. Esther puts on her royal clothing before she enters into the palace, and she stands before the king. Next example, king can't sleep. Haman has come up with this idea to hang Mordechai. Walks in, right, does a quick review of the whole story. King says, "Hey Haman, what would you do to honor somebody?" What does Haman come up with? Dress him in the royal garments. That's his suggestion. That's what we should do. We should take his clothing, take the clothing of the king, and put it on such a person. That's specifically his suggestion. And then the Megillah goes out of his way to say, indeed, that's what he did. Vayalbesh es Mordechai. He went ahead and he clothed Mordechai. And then the final example we find at the end of the story, after everyone's been revealed, Mordechai leaves the palace. The Megillah describes... Let me give you the exact reading of the psukim. I'm sorry. Mordechai yatzom milifnei hamelech bilvush malchus. He left the king's presence clad in royal apparel of turquoise and white, with a large gold crown and a robe of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan was cheerful and glad. So we have a whole description of the garment that he was wearing. Actually, five garments. Now, what's the theme that runs through all of these instances of clothing? Wherever clothing appears, it's always a change from what should have been. Each instance that we find clothing, it was somehow either different or actively being changed. From Achashverosh, where he puts on the royal garment, the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, which really aren't his, he puts those on. Mordechai takes off his clothing and puts on sackcloth. Vashti was told to take off her clothing and come without anything. Esther puts on her royal clothing in order to approach. Haman says, put on that person who really doesn't have those royal garments, the person who you want to honor, put them on him. And then Mordechai himself leaves the palace wearing these royal garments, which also are not really his. So we see a constant, not only does clothing work its way through the theme of the story, but it's almost a changing of clothing that's always appearing. Someone is always wearing something or not wearing something that they normally do or don't. And it's a theme, 6-7 times in Megillah, it's not all that long, that appears over and over, this concept. Svasemes is going to suggest there's something significant to this concept of changing clothing. His approach doesn't even address, I'm bringing in all these examples, he doesn't mention that as far as but how his piece is going to fit perfectly with that concept. Now, the Medrash writes, the final example that we mentioned, that when Mordechai leaves the palace, he leaves wearing five royal garments. That was hinted to already in the Chumash itself. That Mordechai should leave the palace wearing five royal garments is not the first time that we've seen this concept. Anyone have any idea where the first time is? Any recollection? Five garments mentioned anywhere in the Chumash. No? That's four. Kohen Gadol had four unique garments, and the regular Kohen had four, so for a total of eight. Five is not there. I'll give you a hint, it has something to do with Yosef. It's in your sheet, but alright, it's fine. The Medrash says, when the brothers appear before Yosef, not the Medrash, the Pasuk says, the Torah describes, you read this a few weeks ago, the brothers appear before Yosef. And as he's sitting down and feasting with them, about to send them home to their father to bring Yaakov down, it says, "Ulchulan nasein chalifot smalos." He gave them each a change of clothing. Ula Binyamin, and to Yosef's younger brother Binyamin, nasan chamesh chalifot smalos. He gave five changes of clothing. And this is a very odd story because Yosef's whole series of events happened. Why? The clothing. Because his father showed him favoritism with what? With clothing. And now Yosef should have his brothers after this whole story and all of the reconciliation that took place. And he gives them all a set of garments. And you can imagine going down the list, he starts with the oldest, Reuven. Here's a new set of garments. Why is he giving them clothing? We'll talk about that. I hope we'll get to an understanding. And then he goes to Shimon and he gives him a set of clothing and Levi. And he gets down to the youngest brother and he says, "You, my boy chick, fire." Yes, Yosef, after all that happened to you because of the favoritism that you were given, five, why are you doing that? Medrash says it wasn't just Stam, he didn't just choose that number. Because Yosef foresaw that there would be a descendant of his way down the road by the name of Mordechai, who's an Ishimini, who's a descendant of Binyamin, who would leave the royal palace wearing five garments. And so Yosef gives to Binyamin a sign that says, hundreds of years from now, a descendant of yours is going to leave the royal palace in five garments. So I give you five garments now. So that the tracing of the five garments that Mordechai is going to walk out with works its way back specifically to Yosef and Binyamin. Now Yosef, as I mentioned, received a special pair of garments already from his father Yaakov. Now Yaakov, the Medrash traces, also had received a special pair of garments a unique element of clothing, which he got from Esav. When Yaakov goes in to steal the blessings, so the Torah describes that his mother Rivka went into her closet and took out a pair of clothing that belonged to Esav. And it was a special, unique set of clothing. It wasn't just anything that Esav left with his mother. Esav was married, he had two wives, he had moved out, but he left a special garment under his mother's care. It was called the Bigdei Chamudos, the dear, special, unique clothing. And the Medrash traces, where did Esav get those from? Esav got that garment from Nimrod, the early king from the time of Avram. And where did he get that clothing from? From Adam HaRishon, from the first man. Where did he get his clothing from? God himself. God himself, when he exiles Adam from the Garden of Eden, makes him the first set of human clothing in existence in the world. When Adam and Eve realize that they're naked, they put on fig leaves. They don't have clothing yet. They cover themselves because they're embarrassed. And then when the punishments are handed out, and God says, you're out, you cannot be here anymore, the Torah says he made them clothing. And the sages trace that idea, that concept of the clothing from Adam to Nimrod, the king, taken by Esav, and then Yaakov ends up with him when he steals the blessings. Then Yaakov hands off to his son Yosef special clothing. Yosef then gives to his younger brother Binyamin five sets of clothing to show that Binyamin's descendant Mordechai would eventually leave a royal palace with five sets of royal garments. So we could trace this clothing for once. What does it mean? What's the significance of clothing? If Adam didn't need clothing in Gan Eden, why does he need clothing out of Gan Eden? Why does God have to give him clothing when he leaves? And what's the concept of tracing the clothing all the way down? Why does Yaakov give his son Yosef special clothing? Why does Yosef give him? What's the meaning, the significance of the handing off of a garment, of a piece of clothing? Why do we find it so significantly traced throughout our early history, showing up again with Mordechai leaving the royal palace? What's the name of the garment that Yaakov gives to his son Yosef? A ketonis pasim. This fine linen tunic that is given to him, that Yaakov gives him and says, you are my favorite beloved son, I give you this piece of clothing. Now the sages have a couple of things to say about this garment. Well, let me say this. They have something special to say about Yaakov's relationship with Yosef and why Yaakov loved Yosef so much and what he gave him. Now, Yaakov, let me hold off on that for a second. Let's talk about the concept of clothing for a second. We see and we've traced clothing in various different areas, and it's significant. So we just talk about clothing. So as many of you know, when you walk into your closet and you're trying to figure out what should I wear today, or you have an event to go to, so you walk into your closet and there are like, say, 35 to 50 outfits, and you say, I have nothing to wear. And someone else would walk into your closet and say, nothing to wear? Nothing to wear? There's 50 outfits here. What do you mean you have nothing to wear? And what do you mean when you say I have nothing to wear as you're looking at 50 outfits?
How do you appear?
Meaning?
How do you want to appear to other people?
At this specific...
on that day.
Right. In other words, where are you going? Are you going to a fancy black tie wedding? Are you going to a not so fancy wedding? Are you going to just a luncheon? Are you going out with friends for coffee? I need to be dressed right for the occasion. Not that I have nothing to wear, like I'm going to go without clothing. I have lots of clothing, but I just don't feel like I have what I need for this particular occasion. Because each occasion actually calls for a specific set. I don't want to be overdressed. I don't want to be underdressed. Has to be correct. Now the clothing that we wear very much signifies a position in life that we want it to. We place great emphasis on clothing. Whether we like it or not, there's a reality that when you meet someone, you immediately, you can't ignore it. You just see what they're wearing. And whether or not you officially peg them because of what they're wearing, but what they're wearing announces to you something about what they want to announce to you based on whatever it is that they're wearing. and we sort of expect certain elements of clothing from certain professions. If you go in to see a doctor because you're having a very serious issue with your heart, heaven forbid, and you have a cardiac surgeon who's going to give you a very significant piece of advice, and he comes up in shorts and a tank top out of the room to examine you, now he might be the world's top surgeon. Are you going to take him seriously? Okay. Like, I don't understand. You're wearing shorts, and it's like you just came from the gym? He says, yeah, I just came from the gym. Is he the same person as if he'd be wearing his regular white coat? Yeah, he is. Does he have the same base of knowledge? Yeah. How would you feel if you were examining you at that moment? It's just not right. There's something I expect from my surgeon to be dressed in a certain uniform. In the same way that if I have a lawyer and I'm going to court, on the day of the trial, what do I expect from my lawyer? Not just a suit and a tie. I want a fancy suit and tie because that's the look that he's supposed to have. In the same way as in when I go to a sports game, everyone has their uniform. And if you wear the wrong uniform, it doesn't work. And in life, we expect certain uniforms and we wear certain uniforms. When we go out, when we're hanging out on a Sunday, we'll wear one thing. When we go to work, we'll wear something else. When we come to shul on Shabbos, we'll wear something else. And what dictates why we're always changing our clothing? The different environments, the different situations tell us how we want to present ourselves to the world based on what's either the expectation or what it is that we want to. You go to an interview and you dress the way you want to look. If you don't, it makes a difference in the entire process. We take clothing very seriously. And we change clothing pretty seamlessly. Unless you're like a rabbi who's wearing the same suit all the time. But the rest of you actually probably change your clothing and your look more often than I do. From Sunday to Shabbos, it's all the same. But most normal people have different types of outfits for different occasions. And we change in and out of them fairly seamlessly to create the impression that we want to give and where we want to identify ourselves, where we are. And we very much use our clothing to identify ourselves. But it switches. We can change our clothing. There's a woman, her name is BJ, I don't remember her last name. We're hopefully having her come as a speaker next year. She wrote a book called The Chameleon in the Closet. And Rosenfeld, BJ Rosenfeld. What's her book about? The Chameleon in the Closet. She grew up conservative, and she has two sons who became religious, not just religious, who moved to like Meir Sha'arim religious. They live in their own little enclave, isolated environment in Yerushalayim, and they're very happy. And she loves them and wants to visit them. But she doesn't fit in when she goes to visit them, because she just doesn't. She just doesn't fit in. She doesn't have the right set of clothing. She doesn't know the language. She's just not part of the world that they're in. And so she wrote a book describing her personal journey in which she struggled mightily about where she starts being true to herself and I'm going to be who I am, and discovered the wall that she ran into trying to relate to her children in their environment, being true to who she was, and realized that I can be true to who I am and be a chameleon. And when I go to visit my children, I look like everybody else. I have two sets of wardrobes. I have the set of wardrobe that I pack when I go to Israel and that I wear when I'm in their house and in their community and in their environment, so that I can be a part of their lives and not be distracted by those who are distracted by my clothing. And I can just be with my family. And I have a separate set of clothing that I wear in my other life, which I don't normally live in. And she shows that she goes on tour, she speaks about the concept of being a chameleon. And what that concept says is, I am still true to myself, even though, if you would pass me on the streets in Meir Sha'arim, you would think this about me, but not true. I'm just dressing up for my kids. I'm really not part of this world. But for my kids, I'm willing to pretend that I am. And then when I go back home, I have a different wardrobe. We can do that seamlessly. We can transfer, change clothing, And if you've ever had that experience on Purim, what it's like to actually dress up and to create a different persona, how you can actually pretend to be something that you're not, because when you wear something else, others relate to you based on the way that you're dressed, but inside, you really can still be the same, and people make a living, they live their lives unless they can jump in different sandboxes and play in different worlds, and they just simply have to dress that part. The Kabbalistic thought. Those of us who were at the Svarim class that we did a couple weeks ago. So we touched on some of these basic ideas, and I'm not learning any Kabbalah here, just the concept that everything that exists in the world, everything physical, has, so to speak, a spark of holiness in it, which really gives it its essence. But it's clothed in the same way as our physical bodies are what we can see. It's what I can perceive. But if you want to know, am I looking at you? So what's the you that I'm looking at? I'm looking at a body. I could see features on a body, as you can see in me. But the essence of who I am, you can't see. It's something spiritual contained in the soul that gives life to the body that you see. But the body is simply an outer garment, a covering of what really exists inside. And very often the expressions, the emotions that you could see on my face express what's going on inside. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes people can hide very well what's really going on the inside. But there's an external, physical being that exists in the world that you can feel and touch and see. And then there's what really is going on, the essence of the person, which is spiritual and can't really be seen or touched or felt inside of our own spiritual essence. The whole world is like that. The whole world has its spiritual essence that give life to things that we see. We're often misled by thinking that things that are physical are its essence, but just like human beings, there's an element of spirituality, and in the role that we play in life is to really see the world for what it is, to remove the mask and see within every element of the world the true godliness that exists within that. And the Kabbalistic sources refer to the world as wearing clothing. And in the same way as a person can wear his clothing and mask the essence of what's behind it, the world is, so to speak, wearing clothing, and it's up for mankind to really see behind the clothing that presents one way and see the essence of what really is going on behind it. Where that plays the greatest role, when in world history, so to speak, that took on a much more significant role, is the concept of exile. When Adam and Eve were exiled from Gan Eden, they're exiled from the place in which they would have had a total spiritual life, and they're sent out, so then there's a shift in the dynamics, so to speak, of the world, in which they're not where they're supposed to be. They're removed from the center of their spiritual existence, and they're living out in a world in which they're now going to have to do a much greater task of perceiving that spiritual essence of the items that they're dealing with from the clothing that's covering it. And the first thing that God gives to Adam and Eve as He sends them off, gives them clothing. Because they're now going out from a world that didn't need clothing, from a world that doesn't need it because it is spiritual in nature. What you see is what you get, and it's not shameful or embarrassed. It doesn't have to be covered. And now you're entering a world that's removed, that's outside of that. And the lesson that they're taught, the thing that they're given, the tool, is clothing, which covers and hides and says, what you see is no longer what you get. There's something, the essence is behind that clothing. And you are now going to be clothed as you enter that world of exile. Yaakov gives his son Yosef clothing. That's his gift. He loves Yosef more than anyone else, and he gives him garments. He gives him clothing. And the word is pasim. Ketonet pasim. And the sages say that those four letters stand for the pay. From the pasim stands for Potiphar, the person who would buy and purchase Yosef and eventually have him thrown into jail. Samach for the Sochrim, those who sold him. The Yud for the Yishmaelim who sold him. The Mem for the Midianim. It refers to all of his sorrows in life, all of his difficulties. And it's as if Yaakov gives to his son Yosef a coat and says, I love you. This coat represents all of your trials and tribulations, all of your difficulty, all of your suffering. But he's not giving him a coat that just tells him he's going to have a hard life. He's teaching him a lesson. You're going to be going into exile. You, my son, are going to be going out there. You're the one who's going to be in Egypt. And the tool that you're going to need more than anything is the tool of clothing. The words of the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, who explains what this concept of the changing of the clothing. Clothing might change. It comes on, it comes off. You could put on this outfit, you could put on that. You could be a total chameleon. But the task is that the essence of the person inside remains true to who they are, despite the circumstances of life which will require various different garments throughout our life. The neshama, the soul, the essence, the values, the traits. You can switch your clothing in whatever situation you have to be in. You change your clothing. But that the person remains the same. And who needs that lesson more than anyone who's going into an exile, who's leaving their home, is going to be in a new environment, a Yosef in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, is going to need the lesson of there are going to be difficulties, there are going to be trials. The clothing might change. You're going to be wearing Egyptian clothing. But the Yosef behind, underneath that Egyptian clothing, that Yosef has to be true to the Yosef who grew up in the house of Yaakov. And so he gives him a lesson of clothing. Yosef, when the brothers come down and he reveals himself and he's about to send them back home, but what are they going to do? They're going to get their father and then move down with him. And what does he give each one of his brothers? A set of clothing. Because now each one of the brothers are coming down with him. They're leaving their father's home. They're no longer living in the land of Canaan in the house of Yaakov. They're all moving down to Egypt. They're all going into exile. And he gives them each a set of clothing to say, clothing's going to change. Now, technically speaking, those of you familiar with the Medrash that says the Jewish people did not change their clothing when they were in Egypt. The concept of the circumstance is going to change, the environment is going to change, the culture you're going to be in is going to change, but that the essence underneath the clothing always has to remain true, and it has to remain the same as what it was when you were living in the house of Yaakov. And to his brother Binyamin, he gives five sets. Because Binyamin is going to have a descendant hundreds of years later who is going to be a Mordechai, who is going to be living in the times of Shushan in front of the palace of Ahasuerus, who is going to lead the story of Purim. And the concept of this story of Purim is the first exile that the Jewish people experience as a people. Put yourselves back into the Jews' understanding of the world at this time. They had been in, as a people, following 40 years in the desert, entered the land of Israel, and were there for some 500 or so years. A couple hundred years until the temple is built, and then the temple stands for 410 years. And then it's destroyed. Now, we have lived with 2,000 years without a temple. We've watched miracle after miracle of the Jewish people's survival. We are actually familiar with the concept that we don't make any sense, that we should not exist, we can't exist, and yet we still do. We live that. We're familiar with that. We're a generation coming after the Holocaust who have not only witnessed the greatest destruction since the destruction of the temple, and then the greatest rebirth in the state of Israel and 6 million Jews living there, and it's like, it doesn't even move us. And we're watching that which would be indescribable to anyone just from just describing a people. It's impossible. But the Jews of Shushan were the first people exiled after entering the land of Israel. You have this whole story from Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, the desert, the land of Israel, the temple is built, there are prophets, everything's amazing, and it goes downhill, and the temple's destroyed, and God's presence leaves palpably. You notice it's not there, and you're sent into exile. And you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how things are going to go in the exile. Will you be brought back? Will you ever merit to come back? Is this the end? Is it really over? And then within a few short years, a decree comes out that every single man, woman, and child, Minar V'Yad Zaken, is going to be wiped out. And it's got the king's stamp of approval, and where is God? It's over. It literally, it's over. The whole, there's what, we failed. as a people. We have sinned, we have failed, and it's done. And in the story, what's going to change from Avil, Yagon, Va'anacha, from total desolation and mourning, into Kimu V'Kibu, that at the end of the story there's a acceptance of the Torah out of love, when God's hidden hand, which did not appear anywhere, continues to direct those events. And you read through the Megillah and there's a constant changing of clothing that runs from the very beginning till the very end. That idea of when you're in exile, circumstances will change, but you have to find the essence that underneath it. And the essence that underneath it in the Purim story is that when you can't see God from the outside, because it's closed, it's hidden, it's masked, but underneath, the same way as Mordechai's identity was hidden, and Esther's identity is hidden, and God's identity is hidden, and the whole story is filled with people changing their clothing. 6, 7, 8 examples we have in a very short story of people just switching clothing into something else, putting on something that doesn't fit them. Royalty putting on the clothing of the high priest. Regular people donning clothing of royalty. People who are royalty taking off the royal clothing and showing up without any clothing. Esther putting on her clothing to see the king. That whole concept was, says the Sfas Emes, the idea of the Yosef who says, you have to remain true to what you have inside. You have to see the world for what it really is. Even though on the outside, there's a mask, there's a clothing, there's something out there which exudes something else. Like the chameleon in the closet can say, I look this way, I appear and present in one way, it's not really that way. You have to see beyond that. And the Jew in exile has to see beyond that, not only for himself, that he has to be true to who he is, despite the fact whatever he looks like and has to present in the world in which we live, and to see the hand of God in that exile when it's often hidden itself, and you can't see that. And on Purim, suggests the Sfas Emes, the custom developed to change clothing, to get into that mode of following the theme of the Megillah. It's not as things are not as they appear. They're never as the way they appear. Certainly not in exile, where God's hand is hidden. And even in general, the world is hidden. God's presence is hidden, and we change our clothing to signify, to demonstrate that you can change clothes. The outside can change seamlessly from one outfit to another outfit, because you always have to have the right one. And when you change environments, you change systems, change jobs, that can change. The essence underneath has to change, and the essence of the world has never changed in the sense of God's direct hand controlling things. And that is one of the central themes out of the entire Purim story that comes out, that even when you can't see it, it's always there. And the theme, the concept of clothing, signifies that. It has always identified that. Whenever a Jew has gone into exile, from Adam to Yaakov, to his son Yosef, to Binyamin, to the brothers, they always came together with a change of clothing. You're going into a new environment. Clothing will change, the essence doesn't. And in the Purim story, we change our clothing to show that's what we're doing. We're celebrating the concept that the outside, the veneer, might change. But we always see things for what they are. We see the hand of God directing things, and ourselves remain true to who we are. And so we celebrate specifically in a different set of clothing than we normally wear. A suggestion, as I gave in the opening disclaimer, whether you do or do not get dressed up on Purim, the holiday is celebrated through the four primary mitzvahs of hearing the Megillah and having a meal and sending gifts to the poor and having food. That's how you celebrate Purim. But the Jewish people have taken it upon themselves to also do that by changing clothing, to get into that mode of, we can switch all that around on the outside, but inside I still am who I am. In the same way as Mordechai and Esther, the Jews in Shushan, and the world around us still has its essence, even though it's covered with so much exile, covered with so much other veneers, other showings that make it appear another way, but to be able to see it for what it really is. A wonderful Purim. I look forward to seeing all of your costumes on Purim.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.